Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Welcome to The Art Colony, a podcast about art and art history in Provincetown. My name is Gaston Lacombe. When I reached out to our guest today to invite him on the podcast, I told him that he was probably the person who had been talked the most about on the podcast without yet having been a guest. I would venture to say that his name came up in at least a quarter or maybe even a third of our episodes up to now, and that's nearly 50 episodes. And why? Well, it's because a lot of people have noticed that his presence here in Provincetown makes a difference. So there's a lot to talk about today. So let's welcome to our podcast the legendary Ryan Landry.
Oh, thank you, Gaston. It is so wonderful to be here.
Well, I'm very happy to have you here as well.
Thank you.
So I always start the podcast with the same question. Who is Ryan Landry?
Oh, you know, it's so funny. Whenever I do a play that's not my own, and because I don't usually do programs in my plays just because I think it's a waste of, you know, a tree died so the program could live. But when I do other people's plays, they're always saying, what's your bio? Well, you need your bio. And every time I give them my bio, they reject it. They're like, no, that's not good. We need more. And my bio is always Ryan Landry is Ryan Landry. That's my bio, period. I don't know. I'm just another moke's trying to make a living. You know, I'm out there punching the clock and doing my stuff. Can I say shit?
Yes, you can.
Oh yeah. Doing my shit and, having a good time, you mm-hmm. know? So I write plays. I sing in a band. I have a show called Showgirls. I travel a lot and I have a lot of wonderful friends and I'm very, very, very lucky.
Tell us, where does the story of Ryan Landry start?
Well, I don't know. I think when I was a kid, I don't remember much because I was adopted by my aunt and uncle, but I do know when I was still with my parents, I was a little bitty baby and my brother tried to drown me because I was in a crib underneath a window and he stuck the hose through the window. I guess it was a basement where I was and stuck the hose through the window. And my mother came in, I guess, this is the legend. And she saw me gurgling and splashing and crying. And my brother tried to drown me. So I think that's where my fight came from, you know, my want to survive, my need to survive. Came from was my brother.
Do you still have a relationship with this brother?
We didn't speak for a long, long time, but as fate would have it, we are very, not close, but we talk a lot. We talk much more than we used to. And, you know, I adore him. He's as nuts as I am, heterosexual, which I guess makes him more nuts. Lives in Maine on some island. I've never been there, but I'm going to go there one day, you know. But no, there's no more problems anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to let go of the things that happened when you were kids and you were all so I was so dramatic when I was a kid. Like, you know, my brother would try to like beat me up and I would lock myself in the bathroom with a knife like I was Shelley Duvall in The Shining. You know, it was nuts, nuts, nuts stuff. But I think everyone has a little bit of drama in their teen years,
mm-hmm.
don't you?
And where were you at that point?
We're Wallingford, Connecticut, in a trailer park. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a trailer park, but I left pretty early.
And where did you go?
New York City.
Yay.
Yeah.
What were you doing there?
Hooking. And a lot of drugs and meeting a lot of eligible bachelors. Both young and elderly. I had a ball, an absolute ball hooking. I can't do it anymore, of course. I mean, just look at me. I used to, you know, turn heads. Now I just turn stomachs. But I was quite a looker back then. I made the most of it, too.
And is that how you got to Provincetown?
Yes, because I went to Fire Island and they found out I was underage and they wouldn't let me work the bar, bar back and stuff. I wasn't bartending. And so I didn't have a job on Fire Island. I was like 15, 16. And I went right to Provincetown and I got jobs here. And I had a ball and I don't know. I've been here since 1979. I have a burial plot right up in the old graveyard. Put that together a few years before everything got so nuts price-wise. And so I'm actually going to be buried right next to Norman Mailer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And I think I actually, on the headstone, I want to put, I'm with stupid. With an arrow.
Oh, yeah.
Norman would have liked it, I think.
So 1979, you get to Provincetown. Describe to us, what was it like? Who was here?
Oh,
what
was
going on?
It was the Wild West. There was no police presence, really. I think Sergeant Meads was it when I first got here. Anyway, they had been dealing with a serial killer up a few years earlier and all sorts of things, and they didn't have any time for the Queens. And we all had a ball. I mean, things were nuts, and people would only come to Provincetown to let loose. You know, Paul Lynn used to come here,
mm-hmm.
dress in pink cowboy boots and a pink cowboy hat and do a little parade down the street. And, you know, it just, that didn't get into the news. I think Provincetown was a place to go and just really let loose, and that's what I loved about it. I think things changed when Chief Meyer took over. And vowed to clean up the town. Well, the town didn't need that much cleaning up, okay? It was a bunch of Portuguese families and a bunch of queens and some dykes, and we were all having a good time. That's pretty much it. I mean, you know, it was nothing different than today. People would drink too much. People would drug too much. People would fall in love too much. And we grew up doing that. And that's how you learn. And I don't really understand why the police presence is so big now, or why the police station is so big now. But I suppose there's probably some kind of like mini bowling alley or foosball or something that straight people play that's inside there. They're doing something.
Possibly. Who knows?
Yeah.
Where did you work when you first got here?
Oh, I worked I worked on the pier at the gas station.
Gas station on the pier?
There's a gas station on the pier for the boats.
Yeah.
And I worked at gas station, and I worked at Snug Harbor, and I worked at, I worked everywhere. I didn't hold a job too long, but the gas station one I did pretty much because they left me alone. But any service, you know, I was a terrible waiter. It was like people would be like, can I have a Diet Coke? And I'd be like, I don't know, can you? I was a rotten, rotten waiter. I should never have been sicked on any of those tables. They didn't deserve
that. Mm-hmm. Well, at least you didn't have that problem at the gas station.
No, yeah. No. I was, all those sexy fishermen coming up and giving me tips. You know, not the kind of tips I really wanted, but they gave me tips just the same. And it was fun. And I was outside all day and I, you know, living my Cape Cod fantasy, you know, the Cape Cod that I love. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. That was one of my favorite jobs. And then I started promoting nightclubs and that as the years went by and, you know, started performing. Basically because there was a show in town called Putting on the Hits. And this was the precursor to Showgirls. And you could win $100. Now, $100 back then would go a long friggin' way. So you could win that $100 and you'd be set for the week. And maybe even two if you played your cards right. I know one time I was living in, you know, the eaves of a house, you know, those places where they have a little tiny door and people usually put storage in there and stuff like that, you know, in the old Cape Cod houses. I rented an eave and slept on a pile of dirty clothes for one summer. But we didn't care back then anyway, because we were young and sexy and we were hardly ever home. We hardly slept alone. So I don't think I slept on those clothes too many times. But what were we talking about?
Putting on the hits.
So, Michael Lussier was the star of that. And I just kept winning. And they just got more mad at me because I kept winning every week. And I was living off this money and I didn't have to wait tables
anymore. What did you do to win?
Oh, I would do like silly things. Like if it was Destination Moon by Dinah Washington, I would build a cardboard rocket ship and then I'd rig it to the ceiling. Because you know the ceiling's pretty high in the Pied. That's where it was. And then I would put a face
it's
of
now
me.
Ocean 193, the restaurant.
No, I can't keep up.
Yeah.
I just know Leah's not there anymore. But anyway, I put a picture of myself in the window of the rocket ship so it looked like I was going up and dumb stuff like that. And, you know, really the cheapest cardboard and the cheapest poster paints and anything I could get my hands on. And that's probably where the theater stuff started too. Mm-hmm. And so I would do more than just lip sync. You know, I knew that the face was not fooling anyone, right? I wasn't in drag. I don't look like a woman. I look like a horse, which that's fine. But so I had to do something different because I wasn't going to do Cher, Barbara, Marilyn. They don't work with this schnoz, the nose that gets to town 2 days before I do. So I would do these things. I would make these props and sets, and I would, you know, involve my freaky friends who also found different ways to make a living because they got fired from every job they worked. And we started this little scene, and we liked each other, and we were doing some really, you know, bad stuff too, like, you know, stealing batteries out of cars if we wanted to go to high end, like stuff like that. But we can't talk about that.
No, we can't talk about that.
No, because who knows, one of your listeners might be someone who I stole their battery. If I did, I'll buy you a new damn battery. I'm sorry. It was 40 years ago.
But back to putting on the hits. So you're saying that back then it was a bit like Showgirls, where it was like a drag open mic type thing?
Yeah, it was like you would come in, everyone would do something. And there was very, very little live singing.
Mm-hmm.
You know who changed the whole live singing scene was Jimmy James when he got to town. He was a huge sensation because he did look like Marilyn. And he could do Marilyn and a dozen other voices. And he was just really great entertainer. And so he changed things. Before that, it was all lip sync and it was all glamour drag. I think I'm the first one that started booger drag. That's what they call the real
booger drag.
Booger drag. Yeah, that's what they call, you know, when you put the dress on backwards, you know, and you've got camel toe and stuff. You know, I know Ardina does camel toe better than anyone, but I'm just saying back then there wasn't intentional camel toe. It was that. I could not find a size that would fit my moose body. So I had a moose knuckle.
Nowadays, when we go to Showgirls, it's a lot of people, as you were saying, like putting on a whole show, putting on a set, building a whole story around their performance. So you are the one that sort of originated that then.
I would take credit for a little bit of that. Yeah. But I also cut my teeth at the Pyramid Club in New York, and a lot of queens were doing it then too. So that started to bleed into my, because I would go back to New York in the wintertime and work at the Pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was jumping through flaming hoops for years till I set the Pyramid on fire, but not that bad. What happened was I usually hung my hoop by a coat hanger, you know, a wire coat hanger. So that won't burn, right? But this one time I was doing like the musical history of Philadelphia or something, and I was dressed as the Flying Nun, and I was hanging my hoop. My hoop was wrapped in cotton, and then we'd pour lighter fluid on and then light it right at the right time. But anyway, this time I didn't have I could not find a coat hanger. I went down into the lockers. I knew all the I knew everything. I was like, could not find a coat hanger. So I was so hungover too. And I said, oh, I'm just going to use this twine. It's not going to be up there that long. Of course, what an idiot. It burned right through the twine. The flaming hoop bounced off the stage, landed on this girl's dress. It lit up fire a little bit, but not bad. And then Happy Face came in with the fire extinguisher and everyone had to go out on Avenue A. But we had a nice time. It was pretty pleasant out. And then we went back inside and finished the show. But that was the last time I did the flaming hoop. And then, I don't want to be responsible for anyone's scars. So I finished the flaming hoop. But I did a lot. I did a lot.
In one of the previous episodes we had, just a few episodes ago, we had Liz Carney on. And we were talking about the history of 411 Commercial Street. And she said that you were living for a while in 411 Commercial Street.
Oh, yeah, for years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love the Carney family. I love them. I love Liz. I loved her mother, Madeline, so very much. Loved her father, John. Love all the sisters. Grace is one of my, Grace is like one of my children. Grace Carney, I love her. She's in New York doing her thing and being a performance artist. I'm so proud of her. But when I first met Grace, you know, I was living at 411 and she was very shy, 13, 14 year old. and just had that puss on. You know, these young people with that puss on their face and they just look like they hate the world. And you're like, oh God, get over it. I hated the world too. Didn't get me anywhere. So I chummed up to Grace, and before I know it, I loosened her up a bit. And then she was in the shows, and now she's, you know, perfectly outgoing and not moping around the house, you know, doing stuff. She was babysitting for Chloe 70 for a while.
Mm-hmm.
She's just a magical, magical being, Grace Carney. I love her.
And at what point did Scott Martino come in the picture?
Well, I'll tell you, he was like 18, or when I first met him, I think he was 17. And which we've been together for 32 or 3 years now. But in any case, so he was so beautiful, just so beautiful. And I was never into younger guys. He's 10 years younger than me. And I was like 27 when I met him, and he was 17. So I had a motorcycle at the time, and I asked him to go on my motorcycle for a ride. And he said, yeah, I'll go. And I was like so excited. I was like, oh, he's the cutest guy in Provincetown. So I showed up and waited, stood up. I was like, oh, that's the way the cookie crumbles. Next year, see him again. I say, I still got that motorcycle. You want to go for a ride? Sure, I'll meet you. Show up. Nothing. Stood up again. Finally, I say, oh, he's too young for you. He doesn't care about you. Just get over yourself. You know, you don't have any trouble picking up a piece of baloney. And in any case, I saw him the year after that at a Christmas party. And we kissed, and we've been together ever since. So I guess I'm a pretty good kisser after all.
That's your superpower.
Yeah,
then.
I didn't get these lip-sucking doorknobs.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. A reminder to follow us on Instagram at The Art Colony Podcast. And also, if you want to support us, you can do so by going to buymeacoffee.com, where you can search for The Art Colony Podcast and leave us a tip to help support us and keep us on the air. So, Ryan, the one reason you came up in the stories of many other people in the podcast is because of Showgirls. So we need to know a lot more about Showgirls now. When did this start? How did this idea originate?
So sorry, Gaston. I will say that the reason I brought up Putting on the Hits earlier in our program for our television audience listeners, the reason I brought that up is because that's how Showgirls started. So they kicked me out. They were like, you can't enter anymore. I was like, why? And they're like, because you win too much. And I was like, oh boy. So I said, I'll just do my own. And I couldn't call it Putting on Hits, nor would I want to. I hated the name. So I came up with the name Showgirls. And that's been going for, I don't know, 35. I don't know. I lose track.
Do you remember the year when it started?
89. I don't know.
Sometime in the second half of the 80s.
Sometime between Moses parting the Red Seas and Trump's death.
So, Showgirls, tell us. We've given a few descriptions through other episodes, but we need to hear it from you. How would you describe what Showgirls is?
Well, I think it's a way to just hang out with friends. And it's a way it is a good source of income for me. And I'll admit that. But I've worked very, very hard on it. But it is a hangout with friends and open my mind and allow others to open their minds and do whatever they want. And I try to encourage the younger queens who are, you know, just get out there. And some of them, they want it so bad, but they're just dead in the eyes. You know, they look like zombies. It's fear. You know, that's all it is. And it's, you know, they're scared. And so I tried my best to say, hey, listen, don't ever close your eyes. When a lot of them like to loll around on the floor like they're in the Jehovah's Witness or whatever that holy rollers, whatever they, when they roll, and like, you got to get up. They can't see you. Yeah. Stand up, you know, and that's the ones that, you know, need the help. And then there's ones that blow my mind. They're so fantastic. And I don't know, I guess, you know, all these celebrities started coming and the whole town started coming and they, you know, it's Monday night. So it's, I don't know, Monday nights are for showgirls and they have been that way in Provincetown for such a long time.
Now they're also for the Art Colony podcast because we release on Mondays.
Oh, you do at what time?
Well, it's at midnight the night before Monday.
it's not really a full release.
Yeah. Well, okay. It's on all the time anyways. It's a podcast. So
Gaston did not pick up on that one, I don't think.
I just let it slide.
Oh, I guess you did pick up.
So I described showgirls as like a drag open mic, but it's not just an open mic and it's not just for drag either.
No, it's just a performance. And I wouldn't even call it open mic because I mean, some people.
It's curated.
Yeah, I'll say no to some people. But I mean, you know, usually if they have a big attitude or if they act like a big shot or they want this, that, and the other thing, or they want an assistant to come out and take off their sunglasses, but the assistant gets in for free. No. So it's that kind of thing. You gotta babysit a little bit because, you know, you've got some rather young people there, you know, who need to be guided a little bit. And you've got some really snotty queens that you have to put in their place and be like, no, everyone's equal here. Shut the fuck up and don't, you know, don't save that seat next to you because someone else needs it. That kind of thing. You know, but I've had times when, okay, so I'll tell you a story about it. So one time I said, well, maybe we should have a hook because these acts are going on way too long. And everyone's like, well, that's a great idea. Get a hook. So I didn't really have a hook, but I knew that the pool had a hook. So, you know, like it's got like to get trash off the bottom of the pool. We used it to get trash off the stage. But anyway, I brought the pool hook in. And of course, that friggin' audience, at first it worked beautiful. If someone was going on too long or the act wasn't really working, because we sometimes have 22 acts, 25 acts, I'd be like, get the hook out. And they would get the hook and they would drag the person off, much to their chagrin. But of course, the audience turned against me because it's each and every act came out. They were screaming, hook, hook, every single one, you know? And so no one had a chance to even start their number. They were just, and the show would have been about 10 minutes long.
It was like the gong show then.
They got hook crazy. They got gong crazy. So I had to take the hook away. I think the hook's a great idea, but not with that audience. They really let you know when they like something and when they don't like.
Yeah, there's a lot of audience participation at Showgirls.
Yeah, it's important. Because people are paying to see the show. And I think that when many people come every single week, and so I think it's only fair that we allow them to have a say somewhat in how they're feeling about an act or whatever. Sometimes the acts don't like that, but that's the hard truth of show business. I mean, sometimes it doesn't mean you suck. It just means that you have to, like, you know, get a screwdriver out and tighten up some of the, you know, boards that are creaking in your act, right? Mm-hmm. And some of them don't get that and they get all butt hurt and I have to hear about it and I have to talk them down and, you know, whatever. They're just trying, you know, but it's difficult. And so I end up being camp counselor. And of course, some of them just hate my frigging guts because I, you know, said that was interesting or something like that after the number as compared to, wasn't that brilliant? You know, you just can't do that every time because then you're lying to the audience and then the audience doesn't trust you. And then it just becomes a mess. You know what I mean? And of course, then you have the people that say the show is fixed. You know, the ones that don't win usually are the ones that start those rumors. But you just have to ride over and say, no, it's not fixed. The audience decides who wins. And I will admit, at times, I have been high on gummies and a little bit tipsy with the booze. And I may have gotten a call wrong, but it was never intentional. It was only because my ears were working and then they weren't because I was, you know, often.
Well, also very often you split the prize because you feel.
I like splitting the prize. Yeah. The audience doesn't. Every time I go, who wants to split the prize? They're all like, no. And I think the prize is $1,000. Plus I give like $500 like to people like, I'll give $50 to this one because they took a pedicab and they got there just in time. Or I'll give $100 to this one because they've been coming every week and they've never won. You know, so pretty much the level where I stop is about 1500 a week. Then I've got all the employees and stuff to deal with. So, you know, I have to make sure people pay for their tickets, and I have to make sure that the audience is happy with what's going on. So yeah, it's a part I was born to play.
Yeah. You're really a natural at it. I remember first time I came to Provincetown, which is only 10 years ago, within 24 hours of being here, I met Mark Luke.
Yeah.
Who's still around.
Diva Bear. That's
and,
what we call him.
He said, "What are you doing this evening? It's the first night of Showgirls." I had no idea what that was. So we went to Showgirls, and that time it was at Atlantic House. It was in the A House. Mm. And the part, we were just talking about it, but audience participation, that's what really fascinated me, that everybody was so involved in this competition. And that night, Pristine Christine won. And I thought it was a fantastic act. And
I haven't seen Pristine Christine around.
I know.
Have you? I love, the name is brilliant.
I know. I mean, this was my first night ever in Provincetown, and I was like, whoa, this place is different. There's a whole different vibe here. And it was a lot linked to, you know, my experience at Showgirls. It just was mind-blowing. So anybody who comes to Provincetown, if you come here, make sure to stay for a Monday because you have to go to Showgirls.
Yeah, I mean, it's so bizarre. It's been going on this long and still selling out. And just, I mean, you know, but I guess it's the last real old Provincetown thing where all those people in the audience become Portuguese housewives or like the queens from the 70s, and we all don't give a shit and we're all just having fun and we're all, you know, I think that's the thing I try to keep going, you know. Though I fell in love with this town and, you know, architecturally especially because, you know, just walking around and looking at some of the beauty. And I want to be the one that holds up. I don't want to live in a museum, as some people like to say. They always go to that one. But I think that there are about, you know, I don't know, 15 billion other towns where they can modernize them to death. Please feel free to. And I think with Provincetown, I mean, I think there's a reason people come here. And one of the reasons, besides sex, drugs, and disco, is because of the architecture, walking around the town. And the reason they love it so much is because of what they're seeing. And what they're seeing are beautiful, old, well-built houses, creativity. And I would like to see that stay. Mm-hmm. We were just talking to you outside about what the hell they're building behind Max. But my days of holding a picket sign are sort of finished. But I don't know. I wish Barbara Rushmore was here. She was an old Provincetown stay. And she chained herself to a tree outside town hall so they wouldn't cut the trees down. She kept Burger King out of here and McDonald's. All these fast food places wanted to get into Provincetown, and she kept them out. Of course, she passed away, loved her to death. And I don't know who's going to take Barbara Rushmore's place, because that was a hard fight, and she fought hard. So much respect for her.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Ryan, with Showgirls, one thing that's become sort of a weekly mystery in Provincetown is who's going to be the guest star. And you've been getting big names on that stage. Well, Parker Posey's there almost every week. And you've had Jennifer Coolidge. And did you have Aubrey Plaza last year?
Yes.
How did you get all these people involved? How did this all happen?
I don't know. I'm such a weirdo. I think they like weirdos. And so they've become my friends. And then I don't know. This year already, they're coming in. My friend Susan from the band Book of Love. Do you remember them, Book of Love? They were great. I'm Not a Boy. And, what was their other big hit? Yeah, but they were great in the 80s and the early 90s. And so she's coming, and then we've got Candace Cane coming, and Parker's coming back, and Coolidge is thinking about coming back. And I don't know, Debbie Harry was there once, and they're all there. You know, Alan Cumming and all those people that dabble in the downtown scene in New York and some LA people come. I think because Showgirls, as messy as it can be, remains genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's important. And I like to think of myself, I've got a lot of faults, a lot. But I think I like to think of myself as a pretty genuine person. I try my best to be.
Yeah, that's interesting to think that, you know, all these Hollywood types, they get to see so much polished, curated stuff. And then they come here at Showgirls and it's real, it's raw, it's riotous. It's something different from their everyday. And one thing I also find very interesting about Showgirls is that I feel you play sort of a mentor role to a lot of the people who come here to perform. You were saying earlier, you help them to understand how to use the stage, how to their presence in front of an audience. Is that something that you do, how can I say, naturally? Or is it just something that
I'm a big mother hen. Yeah. I mean, you know, I got to hand it to some of the young people today are like, you know, with these words like mansplaining and stuff. I guess they call me Nana, most of them. So I guess I'm a nansplainer. But I don't know. I mean, I grew up with the old folks telling you how it was and you'd be like, yeah, sure, right, whatever. And you go and do your thing. And then 20, 30 years later, you'd be like, oh, the old folks were right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just waiting for the time that all these kids are like, oh, Nana was right. But it's going to be a few decades. I can wait around.
So what's coming up with Showgirls this summer?
Well, this year we are going to I like to do themes for the set. So the set gets very complete because Scott loves to build the set and I love to watch him do it. He's so great at everything he does. So this year is Sesame Street. So we have, windows and staircases and garbage cans and subway entrances and all sorts of things. And so, it's going to go totally Sesame Street. I don't know. Scott thought it was funny. I did mm-hmm. too. So that's what we're going to do. And I think the acts will love it too, because there'll be ways of pulling up shades and appearing in windows and making faces at me and giving me the finger and all the things that the queens love to do.
Mm-hmm. And where's it going to be held this year?
Provincetown Inn. Well, the opening night will be at the Crown and Anchor, because my dear friend Ryan Overberg is now manager back there again. Thank goodness. And so he invited me to come. He wants me to stay there for the whole summer, but I can't fit as many people in the Crown as I can at the Provincetown Inn. So I returned to the Provincetown Inn on June 22nd and play the entire summer. And then in September, I think we'll probably go back to the Crown or we'll go somewhere. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd like to wind it down in a smaller space, you know, in September.
Well, as I said earlier, if anybody is coming to Provincetown this summer, make sure to plan a Monday and go to Showgirls. It's a really unique, fun, riotous experience. But this is not all that Ryan Landry does. This is not all that Ryan Landry is known for. When did you start painting?
Well, I was I majored in fine arts at the School of Visual Arts. But I didn't stay because the tuition got to be too much in New York and the whole thing. And I was just not making enough money in New York. And so I quit school and started traveling more. So anyway, the reason I mentioned that is because I did paint back then. But, the School of Visual Arts was a very strange school. I knew Keith Haring went there too, and I knew him. But the teachers there would like carry a cup of coffee and they would just walk to each student and like they'd go, needs work, or they'd go, good, and walk away. There was no technique taught. There was none of that. So I started going to the Academy of Fine Arts in New Orleans, and then I studied in Florence for a couple of years at the Florence Academy of Art. And I just, during COVID, I went nuts with painting because I couldn't perform, you know, and I'm a busy beaver. Mm-hmm. In more ways than one. And I've got to keep working. I've got to keep moving. So I churned out about 235 paintings during COVID.
That explains it. Because all of a sudden, during COVID, you were having exhibits on your front lawn.
Yeah.
And everybody was saying, when did Ryan start painting? And these are fantastic.
when he stopped walking around and fumbling on high heels.
Mm-hmm.
I wear a kitten heel, which is about a quarter inch heel.
Yeah. And distinguished.
Well, luckily with my age, you know, it worked. It's age appropriate.
Uh-huh. Is that something you, because you said you did 200 and something paintings during COVID, but you continued painting after that?
Yeah. And I, you know, they started selling and before I knew it, it was a whole other, you know, a career for me. And I just was like, okay, I guess I'll go with it. And I've been painting ever since. And I actually have a big show coming up at the William Scott Gallery in August, which I have every year. I love Brian. Galloway is a wonderful friend and so supportive of me and allows me to do whatever I want. You know, I have to say, Gaston, about this thing. Everyone's like, what's the theme this year? You know, I don't know. Maybe I don't want to have a theme. Maybe it's going to be a potpourri. You know, what is this thing with themes? We have to have themes.
I know. Art I know.
I mean, I can see for the set of Showgirls have a theme. It's a set that everyone has to stare at over and over week after week. So you have to make it elaborate, make it, you know, worth the money's, get their money's worth. But with the art shows, like, why do we have to have themes? I don't understand. I'm just going to paint. I'm going to paint pictures of my dog. I'm going to paint Dina. I'm going to paint all my favorite subjects, some houses in town. And, you know, just no nudes. I did a nude show. I hardly sold anything.
Oh, really?
They did not like the nudes. But I didn't skimp on the, you know, the erections and stuff. And I don't think you should.
You know, it's funny because when I started here in Provincetown and I opened my gallery 9 years ago, my first few years I was dealing a lot with the human body also in my work. And the sales were eh. And then with the pandemic, my brain changed, my mind changed, my focus changed. And a lot of my work now is more based on nature, on landscapes, on ideas, on abstract. And that sells a lot more.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, interesting.
Isn't that crazy? I haven't yet to do an abstract show. Now, that would be a kind of theme that I would maybe get into.
Because if we were to describe your work to our listeners, you work in a mostly realistic style, I would say.
I would say more like hyper-realistic, like sort of fantasy realism. Like, you know, I mean, everything's
magical
a little
realism.
Magical realism. Everything's a little cartoony. The colors are a bit too bright. I mean, they're the way I like them, you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, there's always, I like to put little tricks in my paintings. Like, you know, Alfred Hitchcock always shows up in his movies. Well, I like to put like some shadowy figure in a window. Like, what the hell is he doing in there? You know, sort of like, oh, it's such, what a nice little cottage and the tall grass blowing in the wind. And then there's that guy up in that corner. What's he doing in that window? You know, I kind of like that.
And you do a lot of portraits as well.
Yeah, I did my portrait show, did well. But I, you know, I just love painting. You know why? Because I don't have to babysit anybody except myself. And that's a full-time job. Mm-hmm. I just sit there and listen to the same 20 records that I loved when I was 15. And I just paint, paint, paint.
Which records are those?
Well, Joni Mitchell's Blue, Elvis Costello's Almost Blue. Let's see, Steely Dan, Citizen. I loved Lena Zaffaroni. I don't know if you know who she was.
No, I don't know that one.
Child singer who sang Help Me Make It Through the Night at age 9. You know, Take the Ribbon from My Hair. I thought it was so freaky. I love Frances Fay. So there was a record store in Provincetown called the Golden Gull. And this queen, she was always loaded. I don't remember her ever being sober, but I loved her. She was this little short queen. She was very sweet. And I go in that record store, and I remember when it was not even CDs, it was records, you know. And she had Frances Fay albums all over the place. I'm like, who the hell is this Frances Fay? She played me one of the records, this queen, and I fell in love with Frances Fay. And the best Frances Fay album to get people is called Frances Fay, Caught in the Act. And it's a live album from the Thunderbird nightclub in Los Angeles around 1968. And you will not go wrong with this album. And she comes out as a dyke on the album. She loves it. She's like, she talks about being gay on the album. And she's just terrific. Frances Fay. Don't forget her name.
We'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
Not familiar to me.
Yeah.
And do you have any other studio practices, things that need to be there in studio for you to be able to?
Yes, I need my crank easel. I need the old easel from the 1800s that has a crank on it. I don't know why. and I need my doll collection. I have a collection of dolls. One of them is Little Miss No Name. I don't know if you know who that is, but she's this doll with really big eyes, and she comes with a teardrop, one teardrop, and she has her hand out, and there's a penny in her hand, and she's wearing a sack, you know, sackcloth, a burlap dress with patches on it, no shoes. Look for, you guys, look for the commercial for Little Miss No Name. You'll freak out. And then Baby Laughs a Lot. And that's the one that rocks back and forth in the chair and laughs the most incredibly maniacal, scary laugh. And that's a really, and the doll's face is so scary. So I love that one. And then I think I have my Lady Elaine doll from Mr. Rogers. And I have my original puppets that I made out of old stuffed animals. I made puppets out of them. And that's something I really want to get into, Gaston, is doing my puppet show, which is called The Pads and Mr. Bone Show or Problems Town. And I've got to get into it.
Don't you do some of that at Showgirls once in a while?
I do puppet shows at Showgirls, but this would be a sort of 15 minute and going to a half hour after a while, sort of sitcom-y puppet show story called Problems Town or The Pads and Mr. Bone Show. But when will I find the time, Gaston? I've got to paint.
Well, you can start a YouTube series. You can ask my producer, Chad Rossi, to help you produce it.
Oh, I think that would be rather
right?
spectacular because I love Chad.
Yeah, and you do a lot of theater as well.
Yeah.
Do you have a play coming up this summer? Do you have any productions coming up?
My friend Anthony wrote a play called, adaptation called I Know Who You Did Last Summer. And he's trying to get me to be in it, but I don't know if I'm going to do it. But I love Anthony and all the people that are in it. Mark Meehan and Liza Lott, Raquel Blake, Cocktail, and Gene Dante. So I love all those people. And a lot of them are old Goldust orphans. So I might just be in it just because I love them all so much. But I put my focus on my Christmas shows because those are huge. Like we play to at least like 6,000 people a Christmas, you know, our season, Christmas season. So I have to really put my money there and really focus on the bird attacks because we're doing a Christmas for the Birds, which is my play, The Gulls, now turned into a Christmas musical called A Christmas for the Birds. So the bird attacks are going to be fantastic. It's going to be like, I'm telling you, I'm not lying. Honey, this queen spends money on the show. I'm going to buy 6,000 birds. Now, of course, they're like, you know, the kind that you get at these stores when you have a store yourself and you want to decorate your window and like all those birds and Christmas birds and inflatable birds and stuffed animal birds and plastic birds and decoys. And oh, they're going to go away. The audience is going to lose their mind in a good way.
You mentioned the Goldust Orphans.
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about that?
That's my theater company. Actually, Billy Huff, who's going through it right now, really. Billy helped start the Goldust Orphans with me and Scott and Aphrodite and my friend Casey. So the Goldust Orphans, we've done over like 87, 88, I don't know, musicals and plays. I used to do 5 shows a year. I don't have the chutzpah to do that.
Because I remember you would have a lot of shows here.
I would have. Yeah. It would be a spring show and summer show and a fall show. But, the thing is, the Christmas show makes plenty of money, and I just want to focus on that and my grandchildren and painting and traveling. So one show a year for me to do where I put, you know, everything into it is good enough.
Here's a few from recently. You had Sweeney Claus.
Yeah.
Rosemary's Baby Jesus.
Yeah.
The Rocky Menorah Christmas Show.
Yeah. That was for our Jewish friends because we always do, you know, Santa, Rudolph. I'm so sick of Santa, Frosty, and Rudolph. Let's do something for the Jews. They come every damn season and buy tickets. Let's give them something. So we did Rocky Menorah.
And those Christmas Tree Show of Horrors.
A little Christmas Tree Shop of Horrors.
Christmas Tree Shop of Horrors. And
set in a Christmas tree shop.
Uh-huh. Which doesn't exist anymore.
I know. The people who own Christmas Tree Shop came to that show. And we took pictures and everything. And loved it so much. And I was so happy that they came.
So if people want to see your Christmas shows, where do you stage them?
We have a theater that's all our own. It's in the Lithuanian Hall in South Boston. Now, it sounds like it's like some small space. It seats 350 people, and it hasn't been changed since the 60s, so it's so great. Of course, you know, the toilets and stuff have changed. But, you know, like, you know, the coat room still has that silhouette from the 30s. Yeah, it's great, and the stage is great, and the people especially that run it are wonderful, and they treat us like gold, and we have keys to the place, and we come and go as because we're there once the Christmas show starts, which would be November 1st. We're there from 9 in the morning till 2 in the morning every day until closing. But we love it, and it's so nice to have our own place, you know, where we can do all the tricks and all the magic that we need to do. Like when we did The Exorcist-y, which, by the way,
The Exorcist-y?
Yeah. Okay. The William Peter Blatty came to The Exorcist-y. Saw the show and with his son, and because he's the one who wrote The Exorcist. We've had Cherry Jones has come to the shows a few times, so we've been very lucky, and we try to do our best, and we got some great singers, great musicians, great actors. I couldn't be more happy.
And a lot of these actors and singers are people you recruit right here in Provincetown.
Some of them I brought to Provincetown.
True,
and they stayed, like Liza Lott and Billy Huff and a bunch of others. And I love that. I love that they can feel the same way about the town that I do. And, you know, they got to carry on. They got to carry on the stuff.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, another thing, Ryan, that I associate with you is a band called Space Pussy. I've had so many fantastic, wonderful evenings, especially before the pandemic for some reason, going to Space Pussy and having all these local talents go on stage and just rock out, just sing. I called it rock drag or drag rock. Can you tell us more about your band, Space Pussy?
Sure. We started in Florida, and I was with a bunch of musicians there, but they were all heroin addicts. I couldn't get them to rehearse. So when I got up to Provincetown that summer, I was like, I went around and asked musicians. And so our original band was Mark Meehan, Sue Goldberg, Eric Shore, and Ricky Bates. And both Ricky and Eric moved on, but me, Sue, and Mark are still in the band. My son-in-law, Paul Amorese, is the drummer now. He's a fantastic drummer. And Todd, who we love very much, had a kind of a major medical thing happen. And so he's out of the running for a while. And then Mark also had some issues with medical things with his hands. So we don't know when Space Pussy is going to play again, but as soon as everyone's up to snuff and they're ready, then I'm ready to go, because there's nothing I like better than a nice night with Space Pussy and all the kids out there singing and the, you know, the audience dancing around, acting silly. I love it.
Well, one thing I loved a lot about Space Pussy is that as a gay person, as a queer person, very often we're associated straight away with dance music, straight away with disco. But you go to Space Pussy, and this is rock, and it's heavy metal rock, and it's screaming, yelling rock. And it was so liberating to have a different kind of music associated with the queer experience.
Yeah, I mean, I just was never a disco dolly. I mean, now I look back and I love some of that old disco, but I never really got into house music or whatever the latest thing is. And I don't even understand the music at all today, especially the pop music, which I loathe. But, you know, I wish them all the best. I don't want to listen to it. I don't get it in the least. But, yeah, so that was my feeling that, I mean, I was always a rock and roll kid, and I did not get why we had to have a music. It's like your theme. You must have a theme for your music, gays. And it's like, no, I don't. I want to listen to rock and roll, and I want to find other gays who like rock and roll. And I guess I found them because they come to see the band. But, you know, everyone has different feelings. Music is so personal. Everyone has different feelings about it. And I, you know, for myself, I don't look down on any of it. There's parts of it I just don't understand why it would even be called music, but that's my thing. But I do things, have types of music that I love. I mean, I'm really into like Dinah Washington. I'm really into bands from the 30s, like, you know, Quin Sanders Band and all these great Nighthawks, great bands from the 30s. Rudy Valley. I listen to Rudy Valley records. I mean, I'm a freak.
Music is a big part of your life.
Yes, it is. And I think, you know, they used to say, remember they would say, what would you rather be if you had to be blind or deaf? And I would always be say, deaf, of course, I have to see everything. But you know, when I think of it, Gaston, I really believe that I would rather, I don't think I could wake up without music. I don't think I could live. Seeing, I think I could just imagine most of it if I was ever challenged that way. But I don't know, everyone's different. Other people would say, no, I'd rather lose my hearing. And by the way, from all those nights with the band and all that performing, I'm starting to lose my hearing. In fact, Scott has to turn the television all the way up to 100.
And speaking of Scott, I just want to say, when I go to Showgirls, the Penny Champagne performances, which is Scott's drag persona, are always so outstanding. I just want to congratulate him because he's never in the running to win.
Oh, he's not allowed to.
Not allowed to, because yeah, he's married to the host.
He's married to me, and that's the thing. We don't need anybody making up any other rumors.
Yeah, but I always absolutely adore the Penny Champagne performances.
Because he's great.
Yeah. Okay, now before we close this, we have to go through our speed round.
Okay, here we go. Speed
Are you ready?
Round. Well, I got off speed a long time ago, so
Well, you already did one. You said blind or deaf. Well, that's not what I'm going to ask, but you already did one.
Oh, okay. Okay, good.
If you have to choose one of the two, would you rather be acting or painting?
Acting.
Acting? Why?
Because comedy is a very precious art. And the reason for that is you can paint and put it on the wall. And if people don't get it, or people don't like it, you can just simply say, oh, they don't understand. How could they ever, those Philistines ever understand, you know? And if you do other things, I don't know, what are other art forms, and sculpture or whatever, but if you are a comedian and you're not getting a laugh, you suck. So it's like, I like to know where I'm at.
Uh-huh.
And if I do it, I mean, I've done many jokes that bombed, but when, you know, I like to know right there and then is immediate gratification. If they laugh, you know, I'm headed for home.
Good. When somebody comes to the stage at Showgirls, do you prefer somebody who has strong comedy chops or singing chops?
I like them both. I mean, I'll tell you a quick story. There was this guy, his name is Brian Justin Crum, wonderful guy, but I didn't know him. And he wanted to sing at Showgirls. Well, there are two songs, well, actually there are three, two songs I will not allow to be sung at Showgirls because everyone uses it to cry and like, you know, I'm so deep. Look at how emotional I am. Look at how deep I am. I've got to win with this song. It's Creep.
One of them has to be Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
That should definitely be outlawed.
Okay.
But, you know.
What are these songs?
What did Liza say? Mama did it. It's already been done. The songs are Creep by Radiohead. Now, I love Radiohead. Think they're great. I just don't want to ever hear anyone else sing the song ever again. And the other one would be, hey, what's going on? That one, makes me want to kill. And of course, Zombie, hey, what's in your head? You know that one.
In your head.
Don't sing it, Gaston.
Zombie, okay, yeah.
Told you not to sing it. Yeah, so there's ones but Creep is the big one. So anyway, the reason I mentioned this story is this guy was the nicest guy, but he wrote me this email saying, I was thinking of singing Showgirls. I said, great, what do you want to sing? He said, well, I was thinking of Creep. And I said, I didn't know the guy. I didn't know how great he was, right? He's a great singer. I said, no, you can't. Just pick something else. That song's outlawed. I don't need to get into why. But please, if you're half as good as I think you are or you say you are, please, honey, just pick another song. Anyway, he came to Showgirls and did another song, and he was stupendous. And so I knew he had Creep on the CD or whatever he gave to the MP3, whatever. And I said, all right, fine. And let him sing it. And of course he did it brilliantly. And so it just goes to show that I can be very pigheaded and I can be very wrong most of the time. But in any case, Brian Justin Crum, if he comes to show to Provincetown, go see his show. He's a great singer and a wonderful person.
For the crowds you have to deal with, would you prefer the 4th of July crowd or the Bear Week crowd?
Bear Week crowd. I think that's a universal answer, isn't it? Doesn't everyone say Bear Week crowd? Although the Bears are turning into just muscle queens who gave up, you know? So they're all privileged now. The Bears are getting a little growly.
It's changed since the pandemic.
It has. And it's that sad because the reason we love the Bears so much is because they just seem like they weren't trying to outdo each other, just trying to have fun, coming to town. That's what town should be about. Well, first of all, we should not have any theme weeks. It's the most ridiculous, idiotic thing that ends up ostracizing people. You want to talk about segregation. It's like, it's ridiculous. It's like, I mean, I have grandchildren, but do not like family week. I don't like any of the weeks for the most part. I do like Bear Week, but like I said, they're getting a little Aleister Crowley. And, but hopefully that will change.
It used to be for me that Bear Week, business-wise, was the biggest week.
Yeah.
But since the pandemic has changed.
And what's your biggest week now?
You know what? It changes. Last year, 2 years ago, it was family week out of nowhere.
What?
Yeah. I guess all these gay dads put their
kids. Are you selling hot dogs as well as paintings?
What happens during the theme weeks, in my opinion, is that there's a schedule and everybody follows the schedule from one party to the other to the other.
But again, it's busing.
And they don't shop.
What it is.
They don't
shop. It's basically like separating them from everyone else, which is kind of gross. Now, I'm not saying Bear Week is gross. I'm saying the scheduling, like you say, almost it's like, you know, Club Med. Do you remember Club Med?
Yeah.
It was this thing where like, you know, you get a schedule and it would be like 9 o'clock coffee, 9:30 melon, 9:45 shuffleboard. Yeah. Like, and it would go down and you would have, so that people didn't have to think, well, that's not part of the game.
No.
You need to think. And I think thinking is a good thing to think.
Yeah.
You know? And when you just make, well, convenience is our enemy. Let's face it. Convenience is our enemy. Did you ever see that movie Wall-E?
Oh, yes.
And you remember, it's like what the ideal world was, you just got like big and lazy and you sat on this floating chaise lounge.
And your bones atrophied.
Yeah. and you just got sweet drinks all day. I mean, that's what we're headed for. And I think it ain't right.
Yeah.
It ain't right.
Next question.
Yes.
You said you travel a lot. And I know you studied art abroad. So would you rather go back to Rome or Florence?
Florence.
Oh, yeah.
I have an incredible apartment in Florence. It's so great. It's not my apartment, but I made friends with the family who I love. And this place has not changed since the 1600s. I mean, of course, the drapes have. Mm-hmm. But those haven't been changed since the 1800s. And it's so freaking great. It's so beautiful. It's an old palazzo or whatever you call it, like right in town by a park. And they are so kind and they love me and I love them. And the cooking and the family, they're just fantastic. So if anyone wants to know where that apartment is, you can DM me. Is that what the young people say? DM me.
Yeah.
And I will set you up with them because you won't believe you won't believe what you see and you won't believe how kind they are and how beautiful this place is.
Did you go there this winter?
Yes, I did. I went, but I didn't stay in my old apartment because someone was in it. So I stayed at a different apartment that was like, you know, family paintings, you know, the ancestors on the walls and the fabric ceiling gathered into, you know, pleated and just, you know, what is it called? That thing in the middle, you know, that pendant, you know, in the middle, chandelier, you know, but not like, you know, fussy, gay, you know, fabulous. None of that West Elm stuff. It was like, you know, or whatever they love, Pottery Barn. I don't know. But it was like all antique, all the real deal. And the wood, oh my God, drool over. But then it might cause a ring, so don't do that.
Speaking of drooling, my last question.
Yeah. Oh, is it the last one? I was having so much fun.
In the speed round.
Oh, okay.
Do you prefer appetizers or dessert?
Well, lately dessert, but I've really got to cut that crap out because, honey, Midtown has gotten real crowded and it's getting set for an evacuation any day now.
Well, you need to fit in your drag costumes for the summer.
Well, I mean, they don't come in moose. I told you that. So I have to, put extensions, panels in the back, or just don't, zip them.
Mm-hmm. Before we go, we have to make sure everybody has all the information they need. So Ryan Landry, do you have a website?
Yes, it's called Ryan Landry Factory, but I will tell you that I haven't updated it for a couple of years only because I've been so busy. But it just has some old paintings on there and stuff. But it's so weird. People make like shower curtains out of my paintings and slippers and mouse pads, everything. Yeah, and when you go on the website, you can go into the merch department and do that if you so choose. Make anything.
And do you have an Instagram account?
Yes, it's just called Captain Ryan Landry, CAPT Ryan Landry. And you guys got to forgive me. I'm 65. I can't keep up with all this technology. So if I don't check the Instagram account as much as I should, don't think I
is
I
that where
you.
People should go if they want information on Showgirls and what's coming up?
Usually soon? Just plain Facebook. I know everyone's against Facebook. I know I hate Mark, what's his name too. But I mean, until I can find something easy to use, don't forget I'm the original Tranma. I'm old.
Where should they go on Facebook then?
Oh, Ryan Landry.
Just Ryan Landry.
You'll see. It'll be like a signature, like from a 40s movie that says Ryan Landry, and that's me. There's actually about 5 or 6 other Ryan Landrys. And of course, I've reached out to them, but I think that they checked my page and decided not to reach out back to me.
Well, actually, where I'm from in Canada, there's a lot of Landry. It's a very common name where I'm from.
You know, what's so funny is I think that I'm Cajun because...
Yeah, I'm Acadian.
Yeah, because they all came down from Canada and went to Louisiana.
Yeah.
The governor's name is Landry. Can you stand mm-hmm. it?
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, there was the Great Deportation in 1755. The Brits took all these Acadians.
Listen to Gaston. He knows his facts.
I know. And they were forcefully deported and they ended up going to Louisiana because that was French territory. So they took refuge there. So that's why you have the Cajuns, because it's a deformation of the word Acadian. Acadian, get it? So you have them in New Brunswick in Canada and in Louisiana.
New Brunswick. My father, we used to go across the border because, my family's from Maine, way up in the woods of Maine. They were loggers. Forest Station and Danforth.
I'm from across the border from Madawaska, Maine.
Do you know where Brookton, Maine is? Do you know where... Presque Isle is?
Yeah, Presque Isle is like an hour from my house.
So Presque Isle is an hour from where I grew up.
Well, look at that.
In the summertime. We were picking raspberries. That's what we did for a living. Yeah. We'd pick raspberries on those old wood roads. But anyway, I wanted to say about New Brunswick, my father used to drive across the border with us. And why? To pick up a giant bologna. Remember that episode of I Love Lucy where she had the big cheese and she stood on the plane and everything. My father loved these because those bolognas would feed us for like months, right? Just keep slicing the bologna. Did you eat fried bologna too?
Yes.
Oh, and then it makes a dome in the frying pan. It looks like an outer space visitation from some sort of, pink bologna
ghost. It was considered
ghost.
Classy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, yeah. Oh, honey, we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Well, good. I mean, now we found all this stuff in common.
Yeah.
I'm so happy you were able to come on my show.
I'm happy. I
because we have talked about you so much already. So now you finally got to have your own voice.
Thank you.
And thank you all for joining us. Have a great day. And make sure to come to Providence now this summer and go to Showgirls.
Yeah. And go to his gallery too.
Yeah. Go to my gallery too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Life can feel overwhelming, but you don't have to go through it alone. On my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, I share openly and vulnerably about everything life brings us and what we can learn by living with our hearts a little bit more open. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on self-care, motherhood, healing, and more. You are enough, just the way you are. This podcast is a reminder of that. Follow and listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.